Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. The all-new Opel Mokka. With a new visor front face and pure panel interior, this is Opel.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, well, the long-awaited Euro 2020 finally kicks off tonight. The first match is at 8 o'clock between Italy and Turkey in the Stadio Olimpico in Rome. And the tournament rolls on for the next month until the final on the 11th of July in Wembley. I'm joined now by Kevin Palmer, Sunday World sports journalist based in the UK. By the way, if you're listening, who are you going to support, seeing that the boys in green, of course, aren't there? We just missed out on getting a final place. You can text us on 51555. Or email todaycb@rte.ie. Kevin, good morning to you.
Damien, good to speak to you. How's things? The big day is finally here, eh? A year and a bit late.
A year and a bit late, and the countdown is certainly on to tonight's opening. We're still calling it Euro 2020, although it's a year late, as you say. Is that because merchandise was made and printed on delivery and all of that?
UEFA had paid somebody a whole load of money to make a very nice branding logo and print their scarves and their shirts and whatever else. So there was no way they were going to change the name. And it does seem strange that we're calling a tournament Euro 2020, but the Olympics, I think, are going to be Tokyo 2020 if they go ahead, which I still find hard to believe they will go ahead. But it looks like we're getting close to the point where something will happen with the Olympics. But I think, you know, does it matter really what the name is? It's kind of a novel idea that we're celebrating Euro 2020 and 21. But, I mean, thank goodness we've got a game on to look at tonight, and thank goodness it's going to happen, because I mean, these major tournaments do light up the summer, even though sadly when Ireland are not in it this time, which that's a real blow. And the fact we've lost the three games in Dublin as well, it just adds salt to the wounds. But we've got to try and get into it in some way now. And I saw a prominent Irish bookmaker saying, let's all get behind England and they're going to give €10,000 for every goal England score. So that's an interesting idea. I don't know how many people in Ireland will be willing to get behind England, but we have to get behind someone. And we know the England players better than anyone, I suppose.
Okay, we will talk about the actual on the pitch chances later on, but it is a tournament with a difference. There will be some fans in different stadiums. It's been played right across Europe in 11 different venues. Would have been 12 if Dublin was there. And even in relation to the rules around the teams and the matches, you can have the five subs in three tranches. What happens, though, if one of the teams or one of the countries has an outbreak, such as Spain? They've lost a couple of players.
And Scotland, I think, had two or three down as well. I saw someone from UEFA on TV the other day saying that their big concern is what happens if one team has to go, you know, into quarantine and can't play for a few days. There just isn't the time to kind of squeeze extra matches in after the group stages, and that's just not going to work. But for me, UEFA have dropped the ball here themselves. There was a talks in March with the British government. They were looking to try and get the tournament moved, potentially all of the matches to England. I mean, UEFA were never keen on that, because there were so many different stakeholders involved. But I mean, in this time of crisis that we're in, I know it's getting better, and it's certainly getting better in England. There's a lot of optimism over here at the moment that we're coming to the end of this mess that we've been living through. That I just think the whole thing could have been held in England. The grounds are here, the infrastructure is here to put the matches on. Why not just even move the next Euros to the sort of pan-European one if they want to go down that road? But it just feels mad that even the European UEFA Champions League final that could and should have been at Wembley, in my opinion, was moved to Portugal. So you had the bizarre sight of Manchester City and Chelsea fans being ferried into Portugal to watch a match that could and should have been played at Wembley. So I just think, you know, to do all this to try and just keep everybody happy seems a bit of a mistake in a way. And if it does go wrong, then UEFA have only got themselves to blame, in my opinion.
Okay, the issue with regards to, they say sport and politics should never mix, but the issue with regards to taking the knee, it's about a year now since Premier League players began this, the idea of taking the knee. It was a very, very powerful gesture at the time. Now that fans have been allowed back in, the England team, for example, are getting a taste of what fans think of it. Very nasty sort of booing as they do it, but they are going to continue to do it during the Euros.
Well, it's a very interesting debate, Damien. I mean, I don't know how widely covered it's been in England, but when this all sort of started with the George Floyd murder in America, there was a huge groundswell of support for everything around these issues. And unfortunately, the Black Lives Matter people in England went on national TV and kind of put out a message that a lot of people over here didn't agree with, and it was kind of divisive in many ways. And that kind of has turned people against it. And quite quickly, we saw the English Premier League move from a Black Lives Matter protest to it. a diversity protest to a kick it out protest, and that's something everybody could get behind. And I think the issue is at the moment that the taking of the knee is very much associated with Black Lives Matter, and a lot of people over here are not, you know, huge supporters of that organisation. And if what we saw with England cricket team is something that could be done, they've changed kind of the stance, and they've made a very powerful gesture at the start of the Test match at Lords, or I'm not sure if they're at Lords this week, wherever they are this week, and it really worked well. Everyone clapped, everyone cheered. There was no negativity towards it, and I just feel that you're almost giving the bigots that are going to not want to support this a platform to voice their annoyance by continuing with it. And we're going to have the sight on Sunday with Croatia not taking the knee. We're going to have Scotland not taking the knee against England the following week, and it's becoming a little bit messy. And having spoken to numerous Premier League players, they won't name them because it could be difficult for them. Within dressing rooms, there's been huge debate and discussion over what should happen, whether they should be taking the knee. And several Premier League clubs, including Queen's Park Rangers and others, have moved away from doing it and making other gestures. And I think, you know, that it's something we have to look at. Yeah. It's something we need to just, you know, take in the wider picture, because I don't think we want football and we don't want the European Championships dominated by this story. And I think, sadly, it will be, because I'm pretty sure it will be booed again on Sunday, despite the efforts the last few days of everybody to try and outline why they're doing it and really get the message across.
Well, if you're a strategist, you never get into something unless you know you have a way of actually getting out of it successfully as well. I just have a couple of texts in here. I'm a Man United fan, so I'll be supporting England, says one texter. And then we have Patrick, it says, come on, Croatia. So that's the sort of split I think that we'll have here. To the finals itself, I think it's going to be really exciting. There's upwards of maybe a half a dozen teams that realistically are in with a shout of winning it, which is something new, I think.
Well, we just don't know, really. I mean, the last year has been so chaotic in sport and in life generally. We just don't really know who is where in their development as a team. I mean, England are down as the favourites with some of the bookies. Yeah. So I'm looking at the talk at the moment. Who's going to play if Harry Maguire isn't fit, which he isn't going to be on Sunday? Who's going to play in midfield? Should Sancho play on the wing? Who plays up front with Kane? I mean, these are all questions that you would think should have been answered long ago if you're a team that's going to win the European Championship. You don't go into it almost experimenting on Sunday against, you know, World Cup finalists of 3 years ago, Croatia, hoping that you might get it right. So I don't think England are the finished article by any means. What they are is a team with a world-class striker in Harry Kane, potentially the best striker in the world up front, and he can carry them certainly into the knockout stages. But when they get to the knockout stages, the way the draws worked out, it could be France, Germany, Portugal or Spain sitting there waiting for them. So are they going to get through that? Are they going to get to the quarterfinals? I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't be putting too much money on England. And as you say, Damien, there's so many teams in it, and we just wait to see maybe the first two rounds of the group games.
Well, there's
a really good guide in a way where we're going.
And the top two teams in the six groups go through, and then the third place teams in four. So there's a lot of great chances of actually getting through to the last 16. But if you were to narrow it down, then you have France, Portugal, Belgium. Is it one of those three? Do you think maybe Italy, Germany will always be thereabouts? But who are you going for?
Well, I think Germany have got a problem in so much as they're in the same group as Portugal and France and Hungary. We saw Hungary playing Ireland the other night. I wouldn't have thought they're going to cause too many problems in that group. But you would think Germany have, given their recent form, Joachim Löw, the coach, is going to be leaving at the end of this tournament. He's had a pretty torrid time over the last couple of years. I don't think Germany are really competitive at the highest level right now. They've brought back Thomas Müller in to try and kind of revive them in a way, which, you know, given the huge sort of scandal it was when he was left out of the team in the first place, it highlights how much they really are in trouble. And I think Portugal, France are two teams that should come through that group, and they are teams to watch. I mean, one team a lot of people are keeping an eye on is Turkey at the moment, which is, you know, if you're looking for good odds on the tournament, they're a team that are going to start the tournament tonight against Italy in Rome. They've got some good players. They've got a good striker up front who's just won the French league title, taking Lille to the title ahead of Paris Saint-Germain, which was an incredible achievement. So Turkey are a team to watch, but you would think by the end of it we're going to get down to France, Portugal. I mean, Italy are another team on a huge unbeaten run, really done well since the last World Cup when they missed out. So they're a team to watch as well. So there's lots of unknowns going into it, and I think that adds to the storyline and what we can look forward to.
Yeah, France seem to have the best squad, and another player is Karim Benzema, back after 6 years. When you talk about Thomas Müller, and he's probably going to be the player a lot of people will be looking at. Ronaldo in his fifth Euro finals as well. Remarkable career that he has actually had, and what a way for him to go out if they could repeat the 2016. But finally, Kevin, before we go, there is an Irish connection to the opening ceremony tonight.
Of course there is. Bono's everywhere, isn't he? I mean, where would we be without U2 and Bono and their Euro pop classic that they've produced? I mean, I'm a big U2 fan, so I'm not going to come on here and criticise U2 and Bono, but it is quite a Eurovision Song Contest entry, and many people have said. But look, we've got a representative stood on the stage there, so let's cheer on Bono and Edge. It's got to be better than Dustin the Turkey or whoever else we've had in these kind of events in recent years. So let's be positive about the scene. We've got some Irish representation in that stadium tonight.
All right. Well, Kevin, enjoy it. I know you're not going to be getting to too many of the games, but I know you'll be immersed in reporting on it for the Sunday World. And all the games can be watched on RTE television over the next 4 weeks. And on that note,
we are the people we've been waiting for.
Well, it's nearly there. Tonight, of course, the beginning of Euro 2020. And speaking of music, we're going to be talking dance music after this.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.